Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 115 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to see you again. It's been a couple of weeks since we've actually seen each other face to face, so this should be exciting to get back to this.
Yeah, it'll be good to have a little back and forth this week.
So a lot of stuff has happened here in the past week, or I guess some big things. Maybe I shouldn't say a lot of stuff, but the big thing that did happen here in the past week is the SEC decided to make more waves, and they are going after Uniswap, which, for those of you that aren't aware, Uniswap is the largest decentralized exchange out there, and it is surprising everybody that the SEC is doing this, especially after the Ripple case and everything else. They said trading of securities on secondary markets, or trading of these tokens on secondary markets, does not make them a security. So, I mean, Uniswap is the largest DeFi guy out there. They're based in the US, and now the SEC going after them. Worst case scenario, all they do is pick up shop and go somewhere else. It's just a protocol that can be used anywhere in the world. So this is surprising that the SEC is doing this, although at the same time, the SEC doesn't surprise me with the things that they do anyways.
Yeah, this feels like a real weird case to even find a judge that can kind of get his head around a decentralized finance and decentralized exchange. I think it's almost like the SEC is just shooting bullets into the wall, right? Like they hear a noise in the wall and they're just firing at it, and they don't seem fully prepared. I mean, some of the judge comments on previous cases where basically they're saying they're not making a very strong case for themselves. So I don't know if those lawyers are not equipped to deal with the crypto world, because I'm pretty sure they can't hold and own crypto if they're working for the SEC. So you eliminate a lot of people that know stuff about crypto, and you have non-crypto friendly attorneys as your only talent pool. So they haven't touched, felt, understood crypto like the attorneys that would have been into crypto. And then once you're in it, I mean, in order to work for the SEC, you'd have to sell it all. And we've talked about it before. There's not a whole lot of people that get into crypto, and especially into Bitcoin, and then change their mind and get completely out. So I don't know that the SEC's got what it takes to really string together some big wins. And, you know, if you told me that Gary Gensler was pro Bitcoin and pro crypto, and he was sabotaging the SEC and going after stuff like this just to stack losses, I'm starting to think that that theory might hold a little bit of water, because, I mean, they're not really being successful in any way across a multitude of cases across various different aspects of crypto. So, you know, like I've said it before, it seems like the judicial system is kind of like the bedrock, and all these politicians have all these bad ideas, and they can say all the lies they want and publish headlines that scare people away from crypto. But when it comes down to being in a courtroom, you know, the truth comes out and things go pro crypto. So yeah, you can kind of, I'll be curious to see how the SEC does against Uniswap, but I'm pretty optimistic about their chances.
Well, Uniswap's ready to take it to the Supreme Court. I mean, they've been doing everything that they should be doing, and you could argue that they are much more transparent than some of the existing banks are out there today. So everything that they do is literally there for everybody to see. What's crazy to me, I mean, you talk about Gary Gensler, there's been talk about him positioning himself for another office, and all this is doing right now is mainly pissing a lot of people off. And especially if you look at the election this year, the amount of voters that own crypto is growing, right? I think it's now 1 in 5 voters in the US own crypto. And they've been doing some polls, and our two options are freaking Biden and Trump, of all people right now, both of which are, from a majority of Americans, it's pretty close, right? Who cares who wins at this point? When you start paying the crypto people, Trump gets a much higher margin of chances of winning, just because of what the Biden administration has done with crypto here in probably about the past year with all their stuff they're doing. And Gary Gensler is appointed by Biden. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see if the crypto community becomes this swing vote in the election come November.
Yeah. Yeah. So while we're on like politics and SEC regulation, I had some notes here that John Deaton, who is campaigning against Elizabeth Warren, outraised her in the first quarter, $1.36 million to $1.1 million. These are small numbers. I think a Senate race like this will probably be closer to nine figures spent in the campaign. But when you have somebody like Elizabeth Warren, it's tough to get people to donate money to you thinking that you're going to beat her, because that incumbent position is just really hard. So there's, at the very least, there's decent early support to go against Elizabeth Warren. And I think there were quite a few crypto people. Brad Garlinghouse was listed as one of the contributors. So a lot of the crypto side is supporting John Deaton in that race. Senator Marsha Blackburn said that the freedom aspect and the privacy aspect of Bitcoin, those are very good things. And so I don't know that I've heard her be vocal like that on Bitcoin in the past. And Trump even made my algorithm be more neutral or even positive towards Bitcoin, where he sees it as an additional form of currency. You know, he likes the dollar as a reserve currency, but he's not going to, basically he said, I'm not going to stop any innovation on the Bitcoin side. And so I think, you know, I think again, that's a little Vivek Ramaswamy's, you know, bug in his ear about how many voters there are that are kind of, they're easy pickings, right? Because everybody knows that Bitcoin's, or that Biden is anti-crypto and Bitcoin has been pretty tough on it. And so I'm like, man, it kind of just feels like there's a little bit of a swing, a little pro-crypto swing as we get closer to November. And you know, even Coinbase, they received like a letter from FinCEN congratulating them on their efforts to fight nefarious use cases and cooperation with authorities in order to stop nefarious actors. So, you know, it just has a feeling that things are coming towards, you know, on the crypto side, and the timing's right. You know, as far as price has been going up, more people are talking about it, and so more people are going to get into it. So I think on the political side and the regulatory side, I think we've kind of chopped through a lot of the headwinds. And now that the ETF's approved, a lot more of these voters are going to be exposed. And I think that's favorable.
So I guess, to be crystal clear, I don't want the US dollar to not be the reserve currency of the world, right? I don't think anybody in the US wants that to not be the case. The issue is not so much if it's going to be the reserve currency, is if we're going to drive innovation out of the US. And that's kind of what we're almost trying to do with a lot of the regulation for crypto and Bitcoin specifically. But to kind of caveat onto that, I mean, if you look at places like the UK, and we've talked about this before, where the UK doesn't have the natural resources that all the other countries have. So they passed a law, I think, in the middle of last year, and then they just announced that they should have some new crypto and stablecoin regulation coming by the end of July of this year. So, I mean, we're a couple months away from that happening. And if this happens, it should include staking, exchanges, and custody details as well, which we've been asking for the SEC to do that for how many years at this point? So UK could be one of the first major countries to do this. And if that happens, do they become like the new hub for crypto? Or is there a chance that we can kind of catch up? And I think that's my biggest worry, is I don't want everybody, all the innovation from crypto, to leave the US. And that's kind of what the SEC keeps trying to do. Luckily, Coinbase is here and they're fighting back. And although Coinbase is becoming global too, right? So they're not just a US based anymore. They're focused on the rest of the world, because the US is just a big question mark right now.
Yeah. And one of my notes on this too was, you know, a country like El Salvador, which they're way too small to really put up a whole lot of a fight as far as competing for the innovators in the market. But Google just opened up an office in El Salvador to support their conversion to the digitalization of their country. And it's easy for Google to do that because they know what they got in El Salvador's politics and laws, and they'll have support. And so, you know, for me, if the U.S. could do that, it would prevent a lot of other countries from being able to poach talent that's in the U.S. And on the flip side, the U.S. should be able to poach a lot of talent from other countries and bring them here, because if you're in pretty much any other country, the U.S. is an attractive alternative to live in if you can come here and make money. So yeah, I'm with you. The U.S. needs to decide where we're going to be on this, and if we're going to provide enough security for companies to invest.
Well, and the U.S. has done that for a lot of years. I mean, the whole Silicon Valley and startups world has brought in tons of talent from around the world. And now you're seeing the talent from a lot of the Silicon Valley world go into crypto, right? And that's right now, doesn't have to be in the U.S. anymore. And you mentioned El Salvador. I mean, the question marks that I think a lot of people have, IMF is trying to fight El Salvador and say, you need to change your laws and get away from being so pro-Bitcoin if you want us to still be able to loan you money and stay in the regular financial system. So luckily, El Salvador is kind of pushing back. But I mean, this is kind of funny that the IMF is doing this because they see a threat, right? I mean, if everybody goes to more of a Bitcoin standard, then what is the IMF actually doing at that point?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, Bitcoin's not a threat to the U.S. dollar. This poor decision from central banks and other things are the threat to the U.S. dollar. Bitcoin's just a place you can escape to while they make all these bad decisions. Or they, you know, or if you just don't believe in endless debt, right? Like, buying assets it's not illegal. You can do it. So, you know, if you buy real estate and things like that, they don't seem to be as upset. But Bitcoin being more of like a monetary piece seems to be a little bit more tricky for them to understand. But, you know, Bitcoin's not tanking the dollar. Right. Bitcoin's just a place to go when you realize that you don't want your dollars to be at the whims of idiots in control. And so for me, they can villainize it and they can make it look like that, but that's not really what it is.
Yeah. And you're having a lot of people, I think, waking up to what's happening with fiat currencies in other nations. We've seen what's happened in Argentina, and Nigeria is running into problems too. And all these places, Nigeria especially, saying crypto is the problem. We didn't do anything wrong. That's not the case.
Right.
So the U.S. is starting to do the same thing. I mean, Switzerland just cut rates, a few weeks ago, right? So who's going to be next? At some point, they're going to have to somewhat force liquidity back into the system to give people some faith that the fiat currency can work. And when that does, inflation happens and this whole debt spiral goes out of control as well. But
yeah, I didn't prepare for this part of the conversation, but I saw where the reverse repo market's down to like between $300 and $400 million. I've heard multiple cases where the bond sales haven't gone well and people aren't buying what they would anticipate would be purchased at the bond sale, and they're manipulating what time, like the length of bonds that are sold are very different now than they are have been historically, to kind of prevent the inversion of the bond curve. And so, you know, it's amazing how many games they can play to make this kick the can down the road to delay this there's recession or collapse or whatever's coming. But it's the combination of you're running out of money in the reverse repo market, people aren't buying bonds, or countries aren't buying bonds like they used to. Gold is at an all-time high. It's almost 2,400 prior to this kind of decrease due to this Iran-Israel conflict that may not be anything. You've got the election coming up, which I'm sure there's political pressure to reduce interest rates. You know, we're in April now. We should have had an interest rate reduction by now based on what they were predicting in December and January. And we should be looking at our second rate decrease. But inflation's still running hot. Oil prices are up. I mean, it's you're almost in a situation where it's like, well, we can't decrease interest rates because inflation's going to, we're just going to stoke inflation. But it's the pressure is there to reduce interest rates. I mean, the commercial real estate market's going to need to get bailed out, and the banks that have provided those loans are going to need to get bailed out. So you're printing money one way or the other. It's just, do you give it to banks or do you give it to people again? So it's be curious to see which way it goes. But when they print money, Bitcoin goes up. So they're going to print money one way or the other. And I think most people that have gotten pretty well into Bitcoin understand that it's part of the system, all right? It's part of a debt-based system. It's got to, the M2 money supply has got to increase. So I'm curious to see where things go and how fast they get there. I mean, we're in April. We're 5 months away from an election. And I think a lot of people don't feel like the economy is going well for them. I said this morning, actually, I dropped my kids off from school. And on the way home, I'm like, man, I need to pick up a couple things, grocery things. And there's nobody at the grocery store at 8 o'clock in the morning, so I could just drop in. And I saw a carton of chocolate ice cream sitting on top of the Miller Lite in the beer case. And I was like, man, inflation made somebody make a real tough decision here, buddy. Just see myself like, all right, I got $25. I can't buy all these the groceries I want and the beer that I want. Something's got to go. It's got to be the ice cream. I got to have bread. Ice cream's got to go. So like that guy's, you know, or that person's not super, you know, in my mind, this imaginary person's not super happy about the stock market being, you know, high. That doesn't help the majority of Americans. So this inflation stuff is real. Groceries, people are buying groceries every week, and it's in your face is how expensive it is. So I think that's, you know, they're going to have to throw people a bone in order to get votes on the economy, and it's not going to be stock prices. There's not enough voters there. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're talking a lot about macro, and I mean, this is definitely our opinions. One of the guys that I like to listen to a lot is Raoul Paul, who's an ex-Goldman Sachs trader that I would say he's probably bigger on Ethereum, although he's a huge Bitcoin fan too, and he's actually becoming a Solana fan. But him and Michael Saylor have had a bunch of conversations, and they're fun to listen to when the two of them talk because they both know what they're talking about. But from a big picture perspective, Germany's also, there's some interesting news coming out of them. Their largest state bank, I guess, LBBW, is going to start doing crypto custody services, which is a pretty big deal, right? I mean, to have a bank that big do that, they expect they'll allow their clients to both store and procure crypto. And I think that's mainly Bitcoin and Ethereum. I don't know if there's going to be more. The plan is for that to start in the second half of 2024, but just another European country that is getting more involved in the crypto space.
Yeah, on the Raoul Paul side, he's kind of on the list of people that they've been in a long time. I listened to them early on, and they don't rub me the right way. It's like a Max Kaiser, and you know, I know they know their stuff, but I just, something about them, I just don't like listening to them, just from a personal preference. But you going into kind of, you mentioned Germany, we mentioned Sweden. We haven't mentioned the Hong Kong Bitcoin ETF that was approved. Got it. Okay, well, we'll just flow into it. I was kind of looking into it, and I think it's more of an adoption and mainstream Bitcoin awareness than it is an actual impact to the price. I think the way we saw money flow in to go from $25,000 Bitcoin up to the 60s is tons and tons of money. And I think, you know, like max, you're looking at like $25 billion coming in over however long from the Hong Kong Bitcoin ETFs, you know, maybe that's years. So I don't know that it's going to be a big jump in price when those things go live, but it's more of just this further integration into mainstream finance that, you know, the further this gets in and gets its tentacles in to the existing system, the more impossible it is to get removed. And then if you are convinced, hey, this Bitcoin thing's here to stay, look at all these ETFs globally, the chances of it going to zero are now approaching zero. now your allocation, you feel more comfortable with a 3%, 4%, 5%, 6% allocation as opposed to a 1% to 2% allocation. And so more money flows in. So, you know, it is a bullish thing in my opinion. I don't think that it's like, hey, we're going to hit 100,000 because of the Bitcoin Hong Kong ETF. But there's nothing about it to dislike.
Well, so a couple of things. One, there was a handful of guys who got approved, and they, I think, notified all the citizens on WeChat, which is China's version of WhatsApp kind of thing, right? But then they had to take it down because they beat the SEC to the official listing. So I'm not 100% sure that it's officially approved yet. I think it's happening with their SEC just hasn't notified everybody yet. But one of the interesting pieces to this, though, is it's not just Bitcoin spot ETFs. It's also Ethereum spot ETFs. So they are now kind of jumping ahead of where the US is. And I probably should have researched this a little bit more, but I feel like I was reading not too long ago that they had to halt trading on a gold ETF in China because there was just this huge demand to get into ETFs that the Chinese people have, right? I mean, they for so long they've been not able to get into crypto because it's been banned, and this is pretty much a workaround for China to have it done in Hong Kong, and now all the Chinese citizens can kind of access this. And there's a lot of Chinese companies that are their subsidiaries in Hong Kong are the ones that are actually getting approved. So it's I think it's kind of a big deal. Like I kind of echo you, or I don't know how much this is going to affect things, but I definitely don't think this hurts. Like, I think it only goes up from here. I don't think it goes down.
Right. And, you know, once it's in, it's not coming out. Yeah. You know?
So speaking of ETFs, I think one of the other really cool things that I saw was talking about BlackRock's ETFs. And we've talked about their ETFs and how successful they've been. I think they're a handful of days away before they become one of the top 15 longest amount of inflows into an ETF, right? So them and Fidelity are right there neck and neck. But if you look at the amount of inflows into all of BlackRock's ETFs in Q1 of this year, 21% of it was into the spot Bitcoin ETF, which is insane because they are a huge company. What, they have $8 trillion under management, if not more.
I think BlackRock's 17 trillion.
17, okay. So it's, 17. So, but 21% of their new money went into a single ETF, and that Bitcoin spot ETF, which is crazy.
Yeah, I was looking at that because when the Iran-Israeli conflict thing went down, that was on a Saturday, and Bitcoin's price dropped. But of course, ETFs aren't trading. And then on Monday, yesterday, most of the Bitcoin ETFs were flat on flows. But BlackRock still had inflows. And so it was kind of looking at that, I'm like, man, what's going to stop BlackRock from getting inflows? What was the price drop? Maybe 12-15% in a very short period of time. So BlackRock's got 60 something days of positive inflows. That's a pretty long run.
Yeah, 63 or 64 at this point, I think, if not more at this point. Well, so another interesting piece, and we've talked a lot about Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy and just the crazy amount of Bitcoin that they've been acquiring, and they're over 1%. There is now a Japanese company that is trying to become the next MicroStrategy, and they've announced that they plan to buy 1 billion yen worth of Bitcoin, which sounds like a lot. That's $6.5 million in US dollars. So it's not nearly the same magnitude in dollars and yen, but that's still a pretty big deal. I think when they announced it, their stock price jumped up like 90%, and it's now down to where it's only up like 50%. But that's still kind of cool to see Japanese countries doing this or companies doing this. One of the other cool reasons that this is good for the Japanese is Japan has some stuff set up from a tax perspective that you have to pay unrealized crypto gains. So even if the crypto goes up, you still got to pay taxes on it. When it's under in this company, Metaplanet, I think is the name of the company, then they'll be shielded from those gains. So it's kind of like becoming this coin-like ETF for Japan without having to pay the gains every time something happens. So good for them. I'm sure they'll get a lot of money once Japan kind of figures this out and realizes that they can get exposure to Bitcoin without having to pay the taxes.
Yeah, that is kind of similar to MicroStrategy. I mean, if you look at the way MicroStrategy has been raising money in the last few rounds, it's been basically corporate bonds pulling money from institutions that can't buy Bitcoin any other way. And it increases the number of Bitcoin per share of MicroStrategy. So it sounds like these guys have found like an arbitrage on the tax side to get money rolling in and getting more people exposed to Bitcoin without having to hold Bitcoin, the asset themselves, which, you know, put it on the list of why it's really, really tough to keep Bitcoin down. You know, there's just too many ways around it. And people are, when I first got into it, it was like, yeah, this is a Ponzi scheme and it attracts all the geniuses first. So it's like, all right, yeah, this thing's a total scam. And the smartest people in the world are the first people to understand it. And the earlier you're into it, the better off you are. So it's good to hear. And I think, you know, we haven't heard a whole lot from Japan. You know, when we talk about countries, they're not one of the countries we speak about a lot when it comes to crypto and Bitcoin, which is kind of surprising based on my childhood and how advanced the Japanese was on the technical side. So yeah, I think that's good for them. And I think the more companies that have that realization of how they can use Bitcoin to improve themselves and that the better off everybody is, because it's going to be mass adoption, you know, and it's going to be different ways for people to get exposure.
Yeah, and I can't believe we've gone almost 30 minutes without talking about the happening that's happening here in a few days. So that is happening. Yep. I think that will be exciting that's happening. The crazy part to all of it is now with the runes or ordinals or BRC20, whatever you want to call it at this point, there is some interest from people in trying to get that first Satoshi that is mined using on the next block halving, right? So there are a lot of companies that are talking about trying to get that. And I mean, at this point, it's kind of a lottery ticket, but they're saying that single Satoshi could be worth upwards of $1 million or more, which is crazy considering that it's worth less than a penny.
One Satoshi.
So I mean, the larger miners have an opportunity to get it. Shoot, it could be some random person that is running a miner out of their house that gets it, right? But it's going to be kind of fun to see what happens here in a few days with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the halving stuff is starting to heat up. Saw Google searches for the word halving has now increased to a greater level than it was in 2020. And so, you know, this is where things like the very start of the heat up of the bull market, right? The halving happens and then nothing happens for a little while. And then the miners kind of adjust and figure out what they need to do and which machines need to be shut down forever and which, you know, what they can do to be profitable. And then there's a price adjustment. I mean, all, you know, the whole thing that kind of happens down the stack. But yeah, I mean, we're right around 500 blocks away from the halving, which is, you know, close. It's real close. It looks like it's going to fall on Saturday, which is 420, which is a hilarious meme that just won't ever disappear. And, you know, for me, people still don't understand the halving. I read a headline that it might have been a Swiss newspaper headline said, oh, at the halving, the supply of Bitcoin doubles. You know, everybody's Bitcoin is going to be worth half of what it is. And it's like, man, you're not even trying. You didn't even watch a 5-minute YouTube video on understanding the halving. And you know, it's like, one of my friends explained, you know, he's like, I have X amount of Bitcoin and that represents, you know, I mean, let's just say it was 6.25 Bitcoin. He's like, it represents 10 minutes. 10 minutes of all the electricity used to generate, to mine a block of Bitcoin and all the hardware used to mine that block of Bitcoin. And next week it'll be 20 minutes, 20 minutes of all that electricity and all of that hardware and all of the resources that it takes to get that Bitcoin. So like the value of everyone's Bitcoin goes up after the halving. It just takes a while for the price to reflect that. And like I said, my bags are packed. I'm ready for the ride. And hopefully it's another bull cycle, you know, typical Bitcoin cycle, because it's a lot of fun. More people get in. some people kind of drift out or forget about it, and some people stick around. And but the ETFs, and we're starting at a higher point than we ever have relative to the previous high. It's just kind of fun to think about where this thing could go, and that the halving is kind of the starter pistol. You know, it's pretty much, I mean, I guess it is the one. You know, Bitcoin kind of created its own calendar. It's like the New Year's for the Bitcoin calendar. Yeah. And so yeah, we're like 500 blocks away from New Year's.
Well, another interesting way of looking at it too. So, I mean, Bitcoin is still inflationary, right? Now with this happening, they're going to be about 0.9% a year, I think, inflationary, which finally puts them for the first time ever under gold. And gold is about 1%, right? So everybody has always looked at gold as this historic store of value. And now Bitcoin is even less inflationary than gold. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays into all of this as well. And it only goes down from here, right? It doesn't go up. So in four more years, right, it's going to be cut into half. And then at some point in, 2130, it goes away, or 2140, whatever the year is at this point. But
and then because, yeah, I don't sweat that part. But yeah, man, it is. It's like if all the gold miners in the world were mining gold, and then half of the gold in the ground disappeared, and it took them as much or more energy to keep mining the gold. Like, guess what? Some of them are just going to get out of it because it's not profitable anymore. But if the market still has the same demand for gold, I'm always a little bit nervous about it because it's a big change and you just don't know what's going to happen. And so I'm always kind of like, in Bitcoin, I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop and for me to be wrong and for this whole thing to fall apart and for the Peter Schiffs of the world to laugh. And so it's like the halving is really the only thing at these days where I'm like, oh man, like, is it going to happen the same way again? You know, or is this going to be something weird going to happen? Something's going to go wrong. So I'm like happily anxious to see how things go.
Well, and if it does go how it usually goes, we're in for about 6 months of boring activity before it takes off. So like everybody's probably expecting for the happening to happen in the next day for Bitcoin to jump, and that doesn't happen. Usually it even goes down a little bit right after the happening, and then goes into exponential rise from there. So we'll see what happens. Is this time the same or different? Who knows?
Yeah. I mentioned Peter Schiff and gold, and there was a Fox News or Fox Business segment where Natalie Brunell from Coin Stories podcaster was on and talking pro Bitcoin. And then they brought in Peter Schiff to basically have an argument. And, you know, that's what traditional news media does, is like they like people to kind of yell at each other. And, you know, Natalie Brunell does her kind of level-headed Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin is good, here's why stuff. Peter Schiff says, well, if she was smart, she would sell all of her Bitcoin after this interview. And I was like, one, there's no way I would be on TV and let somebody call me dumb without saying like something about that, because that's weird. But the thing for me is like, Peter Schiff isn't dumb. Like, if Peter Schiff, the reason that I think most Bitcoin people are frustrated with Peter Schiff is that he's smart and he gets it and he understands that the dollar's got problems, but he just refuses to even allocate a half a percent of his portfolio to Bitcoin. And to me, I've kind of gotten to where I think it's just a shtick. Like, it's just a marketing campaign for him to, and his target market is anti-Bitcoin, you know, pro-gold older people. And I think, so like the more that he talks like that, the more that I think that it's just him trying to enrich himself at the expense of other people and trying to basically play, if they're anti-Bitcoin, he's playing to them as, yeah, you're right, Bitcoin is bad, gold is good, buy gold from shiftgold.com. And so I kind of like listening to him because it's good to hear a dissenting voice. But now I'm like, I think he's actually a bad guy, not just a guy that's doing a shtick, and he's just trying to prevent other people from making more money because he's got a business that doesn't benefit from Bitcoin. So I'm actually, like, I don't usually get irritated by much of anything, but it was really irritating when he was like, if she was smart, this is what she would do. I'm like, that might be the mentality that prevents him from being a Bitcoiner, because it's like, yeah, you get into Bitcoin, it's like, yeah, okay, some people in Bitcoin are 100% allocated to Bitcoin, and they're on a Bitcoin standard, and they don't own any assets otherwise. And some people are like, well, I like to have dividends coming in or rental income from real estate investments, and I've got an allocation to Bitcoin, and you know, that's reasonable for me. And I think most people in Bitcoin are like, yeah, I don't agree with you, but okay, you know, you're not dumb. Like, and then you got Peter Schiff basically just calling people names on TV. I think that was the last time I'm like, oh, Peter Schiff's, you know, he's almost right. He just doesn't get it. I think he gets it, and I just don't think he's a good actor.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I got into Bitcoin was because I was starting with gold and silver, thinking that was where I needed to go. And if I'm not a Peter Schiff fan at all, there's a guy named Mike Maloney who sells gold and silver as well. But one of the big things he does is education, right? And his education on kind of the hidden secrets of money, which is a great, 10-part series at this point, it was really educational. And it turned me into saying, well, this makes a lot of sense, but Bitcoin makes a lot more sense in this situation than gold and silver does. And he owns Bitcoin and a few other cryptocurrencies as well. And he's talked about that. So of course he is definitely biased towards gold and silver, and says, if you want to buy gold and silver, do it through him. If you want to buy crypto, then this is what he's buying too. So yeah.
Lawrence Lepard. He's another guy that was a gold guy and now is a golden Bitcoin guy and is maybe now a Bitcoin and gold guy. but very reasonable, very like pro everybody, you know, it's not a zero sum game for him. You know, everybody can succeed. And that's the kind of mentality that I like listening to. So yeah, as long as we're throwing out some people that we've listened to that we liked and kind of helped us kind of develop our investment thesis into Bitcoin, Lawrence Lepard is another one.
So to touch on a few things that isn't Bitcoin, I know we did some of that at the beginning, but a few other things that probably you don't care nearly as much about. Solana is in the news here recently too. Solana had a ton of congestion issues, and they've had some fixes rolled out to help fix some of that. And I don't think it's done yet. I think there's more coming, but Solana has still turned into one of the blue chips from a crypto perspective. Right now they're struggling. I don't think they went down like they usually do and kind of close their business type thing. And they just, it was taking a very long time for the blocks to get cleared, which is kind of crazy considering they're supposed to be doing 50,000 per second. That wasn't really happening. So it's getting worked on. I guess they keep saying their goal is to be battle tested when this billion people come into crypto in 2030 or maybe even earlier. So they're trying to work out the kinks now. We'll see what happens, but at least they're improving, right? And they're at least not shutting down for hours and hours at a time anymore.
Well, at least I agree with that mentality of like, hey, we're still playing in the sandbox. Like as far as Solana goes, to admit that is kind of an anti-capitalism business approach, but it's probably honest because we're just not there. I mean, it's still so early.
And then I want to talk about NFTs a little bit too. So we talked about Steppen kind of a while ago, and that was an NFT you could get and you could earn rewards based on the number of steps that you took in a day. They just signed a 1-year partnership with Adidas, which is kind of interesting. Huh. So Adidas, I think what will come out of this is there will be some NFTs and some merchandise coming, and it'll be kind of a test. And Adidas isn't really new to partnerships like this. They've partnered with a couple of other big name companies as well, but it will be interesting to see what actually happens and if this takes off. And if it does, I would expect them to do more. If it doesn't, then kind of what we've talked about in the past, I love when they try new things and see what happens. And then the last thing that I had was Sui, however you want to say it, has announced that they have a handheld gaming system that is coming out in 2025. So I think it's kind of interesting because they're partnering with Playtron, which is a handheld gaming software startup. And their claim to fame has been that they have an OS that supports pretty much any game from any operating system. So it is kind of cool to see that happening. Vistin Labs, which is kind of the company that did Sui, is not doing it on their own, much like Solana did with their Saga phone. however you say that. So it is kind of cool to see. We'll see if other things happen. I mean, they did a lot of airdrops for the Saga phone. I don't know if Sui tries to do something for this gaming system, but it will theoretically play both crypto games and then non-crypto games too. So still a lot more details to come out, but we're a year away or so from that happening. So that'll be cool to see too.
Yeah, I think these little ways to earn crypto, whether it's games or steps or whatever, have some legs. I mean, they already, like, health insurance companies already do it. You know, like if you work for a company, you get like a $50 gift card every year if you do X, Y, or Z or do preventative appointments with your doctors and things like that. So, you know, there's that piece of it. So, I'm like one of the Bitcoin guys that thinks there's got to be some use cases for other cryptos. And even if they find a good use case and it works and there's video games where people earn random cryptos, then they can convert those into Satoshis on a decentralized exchange, or a Bitcoin developer can come up with a game that does it with Satoshi. So, you know, to me, there's the Bitcoin sandbox and then the crypto sandbox, and then Bitcoin can adopt any of those crypto successes. So I think, you know, much like everything, like it's always all good for Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin's like anti-fragile. Like the more things that go on that are weird or bad, and over the period of time, it just becomes stronger. So I say go for it and get more people in. And for young people to get into crypto and understand it and see value in digital assets would put those young people ahead of other young people whose parents are Peter Schiff types that are anti digital assets and only pro gold and real estate. So yeah, I'm on board with that.
Awesome. Well, that's all that I had on my end. Anything else we missed on your end?
Yeah. So we kind of, you mentioned the person that got you into Bitcoin from the gold and silver side and education. And we just talked about young people in gaming to get kind of exposure into digital assets. So I've got an 11-year-old and a 6-year-old who will have Bitcoin or do have Bitcoin. And my 6-year-old is just aware of it, you know, but my 11-year-old, like he was, you know, he'll take allowance in partial Bitcoin, partial dollars. And if he has birthday money, he'll give me money and buy Bitcoin and kind of keep his stack going. But it's really just, he's still in the US dollar world. Like he's not he doesn't understand the money side and things like that. So we went on vacation last week, which had us about like less than something like 20 hours in the car. And my kids love getting on screens and tablets and phones. And I hate it when they do. And so I was like, all right, well, here's what the deal is. Before you get on screens, we're going to do a little Bitcoin education. And so I was listening to a podcast in El Salvador. There's a curriculum called Mi Primer Bitcoin, which my first Bitcoin. But it's for high school students. It's a PDF. It's like 120 pages of kind of lessons on money and Bitcoin and how kind of everything fits together. And so I was kind of like, all right, between this and me being able to just kind of talk, we should be able to get pretty far in a drive. And then every time we do a lesson, you know, they earn some screen time and they can kind of veg out, and it makes the ride a lot easier. I don't besmirch any parents who put their kids on screens on a long road trip. So anyway, I've kind of got to the point where I've just kind of had enough. I need the kids to understand more. My son came home at school. They watched CNN 10, which is like the top 10 news stories for kids on CNN. And one day he was like, oh yeah, inflation's good, Dad. Everyone's wages are rising. And, you know, and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. All right, we need to have some real conversations about money and inflation and how the news works. And so anyway, I downloaded a PDF of this curriculum and went through it. We made it through, I don't even know, maybe 40 something pages of it. And we covered basically the money side, origins of money, you know, what's good money, what's bad money, shells, you know, shells can't be good money. It can't be easily reduced. But my kids had an understanding of store of value, medium of exchange. You know, we touched on unit of account. I think that one's tough. but they understand, like, yeah, we use the US dollar for the unit of account. They understand money's got to be portable and divisible and fungible and scarce and all of those things. And my son really picked up on time preference, low time preference being preferable. But sometimes you have short time. I mean, we were on our way to vacation. Guess what? Vacations are high time preference, right? We could have bought more Bitcoin with the money we spent on vacation. But you can't live your life with and just waiting for some future thing to happen for you. But like, you know, it touched on trade-offs and opportunity cost, and we made it all the way through like the gold standard in 1971, and coming off of, we did Executive Order 6102 and the collection of gold from citizens, and then paying them $20 an ounce for it, and then the next year cutting that in half. And so, and then we talked about 1971 and Richard Nixon cutting off the gold standard, and now we're just in fiat money. And they understand it pretty well. And it was kind of funny because I was like, when we did Executive Order 6102, and I was like, you know, we're in America, we have freedom. It would be really strange if the government said, hey, everybody, you got to turn in all your gold, right? And they're like, yeah, that'd be weird. I was like, yeah, it was kind of weird when COVID hit and they said you can't go to school, right? I was like, yeah, that was a weird thing that happened a long time ago, but like weird things are happening now, you know, keep your head on a swivel. So I'm trying to educate them on stuff without creating like, you know, the next Unabomber type kids. But it was really good. So I'd recommend if you got younger people or anybody that's just living their normal life, working and earning dollars and spending dollars and trying to save in traditional ways. If it's called Me Premier Bitcoin, it's like, you know, like everything, it's open source and all that. My first Bitcoin. And it was really good. It has a logical path to go from money to Bitcoin, and kind of talks about centralization versus decentralization. So far, so good. I'm a third of the way through it. So, you know, I kind of have to adapt it a little bit for 6 and 11 year olds, but you know, anybody can do that.
That's a great idea. I might have to do that with my kids here pretty soon too.
Well, you had a lot of time in the car. I feel like the car is, ever since podcast came out, I was like, oh man, instead of listening to the same songs that I've listened to my whole life that I like, I can listen to podcasts and learn about Bitcoin or real estate or whatever. And so now every time I'm in the car, we're just like vegged out for 2 hours. I'm like, that was kind of 2 hours of missed opportunity to learn something. So yeah, I would recommend it. I'm sure that people won't think it's perfect, but it's way better than not teaching people about it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm sure we'll have some more interesting things to talk about next week. So until then, great chatting with you, Hal.
Sounds good. See you next time when each reward is 3.125 Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Awesome.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below. And hope to see you there.